Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of the Deep Blue Podcast. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest is former Cougar linebacker and current assistant athletic director for football, health, and performance, Colby Clausen. Colby, thanks for taking a few minutes. It's good to see you. It's good to talk with you.
It's great to see you. Thanks for having me on.
So let's go over the title. I love how the titles seem to be getting bigger and bigger. So let's start with the title that you have. You're the assistant athletic director for football, health, and performance. So I think a lot of people, based off of the title, might think that you're the strength and conditioning coach, but it goes beyond that. So give everybody an idea of what your job and your title entails.
So it's actually just changed in the last couple of months, you know, as it seems like things are evolving, you know, ever evolving. So it's a little bit different. I can describe a little bit of what I do now, but what they originally brought me in to do was to bridge this gap between strength and conditioning and the training room. And there's a lot of other pieces to that. But I think a lot of former athletes will tell you a lot of times there's not a good bridge between those professions. And there's some lost communication and maybe some wasted resources and some things that could do better to in terms of handing an athlete off from when they get hurt and when they rehab back to the weight room and back to that level of elite performance. So initially, my job as a dual credentialed clinician, I'm a physical therapist by trade, and I've also spent a lot of time training and doing things in the strength and conditioning setting. So my job was initially to come in and build what we call a high performance team. A high performance team in the sports setting consists of your athletic trainers, your physical therapists, your physicians, your nutrition folks, your mental health and mental performance providers, and then your strength and conditioning coaches. So my job was to come in and oversee that whole process and try to create a more holistic approach to athlete care and athlete performance by building bridges and helping those professions work together a little more seamlessly.
That sounds like that is quite the undertaking to come in and try and take all of those different and moving parts and to try and work together as one. Plus, on top of it, not everybody's situation is the exact same. So you have to cater things to individual athletes depending on what they're dealing with the injury or mental health. How big of an undertaking has that been?
It's a good thing you go in naive sometimes, because I think if in my mind it was going to go a certain way and I had a lot of great ideas, and then you get into the real world and you realize you're dealing with people and people have different personalities, and especially in the sports world, for better or for worse, there's some ego, there's some competition there. And so it was really difficult to come in and try to blend personalities, and really this concept is relatively new in the sports world, especially in America and in football and college football. So I was dealing with some novel concepts and ideas, but it was a big undertaking. But I think it took longer than I wanted it to take. But I think we got better and better and better, and slowly we created a better product for our athletes.
But anytime you're doing something that isn't widely known or practiced, sometimes it can be hard to get people to say yes. Was it a hard sell? Obviously, you got it done, so clearly BYU saw the value in it. But what was that early stage as you're trying to pitch this and trying to explain to everybody what this could mean for BYU?
Yeah, I think in their minds, everyone has the idea that, yeah, we need to work together, we got to collaborate, we got to communicate. The ideas are really good, but I think the difficulty is I think, is when you have people that have and professions that have widely overlapping scopes of practice. So part of the challenge I had was coming in, and I'll give three examples. So physical therapists, athletic trainers, strength and conditioning coaches. all distinctly different. Two of, you know, athletic trainers and physical therapists have their own licensure, but they share this wide-ranging scope of practice. So an athletic trainer could, by their practice, take an athlete from the time they get hurt on the field through all of the rehab and then through the performance. That's well within their scope of practice to do that. But are they best set up to do that, or is a strength coach better on the tail end of that where we start getting into training? So those areas where those scopes of practice blend is where it becomes really challenging. And I think that's where it becomes more business management, right? And making decisions on, okay, how do we hand an athlete off, and how do we create processes and systems where this works? It's not all about the sports science and about just best practices in sports science or sports rehab. It's a lot about business management and how do we get the most out of each profession and the most out of each discipline and do it smoothly.
How much more prepared for this do you believe you are because you're a former athlete? And I don't know how many people who are doing what you're doing are also former athletes, or I would imagine it certainly helps, but how much do you feel, how much more prepared do you feel because as a former athlete, you know the needs of what athletes go through?
Yeah, I think there's a uniqueness to that for sure. And I can think of a few different fronts. I think one is you just know what the day in and day out life is like a student athlete, and you know the grind that they go through academically, but then, you know, even in workouts, I remember, you know, being under Coach Ulmer and some of the workouts that he put us through, and that even before we got to the workout, that was a mental grind, thinking, man, I got something coming up that's going to be really tough, right? So I think you have a unique window into how an athlete thinks and feels that way. But then I think the other aspect of this is just the stresses of the game. I think when you understand what those athletes go through in practice and the beating that your body takes, I think it helps you in the preparation phase to understand, you know, in rehab, we're always trying to build an athlete up and to make them more resilient, to make their tissues more resilient, to make their nervous system more resilient, and to make their bodies more resilient. And so understanding what those stresses are and how to get from an athlete that might be injured to an athlete that we have to put back in tip-top shape and at an elite, you know, performing at an elite level. I think understanding that whole spectrum of an, you know, being a former athlete was super helpful with that.
Look, I mean, it may feel like it was a long time ago, but your playing career was not that long ago. But the advancements in this field have been significant. How different is what you're doing now at BYU? How different is it from what it was when you were a player?
It's a lot different. And you know what? I think the pendulum swings sometimes, right? I think we go from, you know, Coach Ulmer, he pushed us really, really hard. We were all very, very strong. But we were all pretty resilient too. You know, I spent my whole playing career here and I never got hurt. And so I think that's a testament to what Coach Ulmer did for us. I think where it's changed a lot is in our ability through technology to track players' physiology and recovery to see how they're responding to a certain stimulus that you're giving them. So I look at rehab and strength and conditioning and athletic training. If you look at it through a very simple lens, it's giving an athlete a stimulus and hoping they'll recover to, you know, from that stimulus. And if you give them too little, they're going to be weak and their bodies aren't going to be resilient on the field. And if you give them too much, they're going to break down. So I think with what we had at the time, I thought Coach Ulmer did a great job. Now, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. I can look back and think, well, we probably did a little bit too much of this, or we didn't do enough of that. But I think now our ability to track through some of our sports science equipment, how athletes are responding to the stimulus that you're giving them, and then change that in real time if you need to. That's where I think the biggest differences come. Training athletes, though, it's an interesting concept because you want to train them at their ceiling, and when you have a team of 120 guys, and you're trying to train the whole team with limited resources. You know, ideally we'd be one-on-one with every single athlete, but we don't have the time or the resources to do that. So what you try to do is find with the entire team where that ceiling is. And for a few guys, that's going to be a little too much. And we got to identify those guys and pull them back a little bit. And with some guys, that's not going to be enough. So we got to give them a little bit more. So it's tricky, but we use some of our sports science testing and sports science equipment to help us keep track of those guys and where, you know, what that optimal stimulus is, so we can have them perform at their elite level, but then also stay healthy.
Every team, certainly, the goal is to get through the entire season and nobody's injured and you're 100% the whole time. That's just not realistic, especially in the sport of football with as physical as it is. But last year, this team was relatively healthy, and we saw what they were able to do when everybody was able to be on the field getting the 11 wins. And we obviously all know how the season played out. Did we just go ahead and give you the credit for keeping all these guys ready to roll?
No, I had a very small part in that. But man, we've got some great people. I look at everybody on my team that contributed to that. And a lot of that goes unseen. I mean, from our office manager, Candace, right, that does a lot of stuff for us. Shout out to her. It's administrative assistant day coming up here.
Well done. Well played.
But then to our athletic trainers, to our physical therapists and our strength coaches and our sports science guys, and then to our coaches, none of this is possible unless our coaches listen to us as well. So I think our coaches, you know, Jay Hill and Kalani and A-Rod, they all did a great job of listening to what we're saying. If we're saying, hey, I think we need to pull back on the guys a little bit this week and cut a couple of periods of practice, they were really good to hear that. And you know, there's always differences of opinion on things, but I think we worked together pretty well to create a good product.
All right, we've talked a lot about what you're doing now. You ready to get into you as the person?
Let's do it.
You ready to talk about you?
It's kind of boring, but we'll. Yes,
okay,
let's go for it.
Okay, let's. You know what? There's no place better to start than at the very beginning. You grew up in Wales, Utah. For those that do not know where Wales, Utah is, where is that?
Wales is located in the heart of San Pete County, which is about an hour south of here. So the next biggest town that people might recognize is Moroni,
okay,
and Fountain Green, right? So we're kind of nestled up against the West Mountains there in San Pete County in the foothills, and amazing place to grow up.
Okay, so if you say amazing place to grow up, what do you do for fun in Wales?
You create a lot of your own fun. So I spent a lot of time outdoors. I had a dirt bike growing up, in four wheeler. So I was in the mountains all the time with my buddies. I had a lot of for such a small town. I actually had a lot of kids my age. And so we spent a lot of time together. We hunting and fishing and camping, and then we played a lot of sports together too.
So, what is your family dynamic? Brothers, sisters, all that. let's go through that. Let's give a shout out to your family here.
All right. So, my mom and dad. My dad passed away it's been about 12 years ago now. So, my mom and dad, and then I have an older sister and a younger sister, and then a younger brother. So, four of us.
Close family growing up.
Very close family. Yeah, we were as siblings, we were just a couple of years apart, each of us. So we have, you know, the family dynamic with your siblings obviously doesn't go ideal all the time, but amazing family. I'm still super close with my siblings. Love my siblings, and had a great childhood.
You mentioned that, you know, you played a lot of sports. You had opportunities to play a lot of sports. We obviously know the way that you gravitated ultimately, but for you, was it always football, or did you play a lot of different sports?
No, football came later for me. And really, when I started football, I was a really bad football player. So it really started with basketball and baseball. So I played basketball and baseball. You know, it was like what you did every year. In the winter, you played basketball, and in the summer, you played baseball. And I did that through all of my elementary school years. And love that. And then when I got into, middle school, football wasn't even on my radar. I had a lot of friends that played or that signed up to play Little League that first year. And seventh grade was the first year we had the opportunity to play tackle football. So Before that, it was just football at recess for me. And I didn't know much about the game. But I signed up for football because I heard a lot of my buddies were going to sign up for football. And but my seventh and eighth grade years of football, I was a very poor football player. So it took a little while for me to develop and kind of understand the game and then come to love the game. But I honestly don't think I made a tackle or caught a ball or anything my entire Little League career.
Do you ever think back on that decision and what if I hadn't signed up for football, knowing how your career has gone and what it's led you to? Do you ever think back like, wow, that what if I didn't do that?
Yeah, I think about those things, you know, sometimes because there were a bunch of little steps along the way that kind of led me to where I'm at right now. And obviously coming through BYU and playing was one of those major steps. But yeah, I think about that pretty often.
Could you have, because you mentioned basketball, baseball, do you think if you had stayed with one of those, that you would have been able to play at the next level in either of those sports?
You know, I don't think I was technical enough to be able to do that. I think I had, I think my gifts were physicality and toughness. And I tell people now, if a caveman could do it, then that's probably the sport I played. I actually ended up switching from basketball to wrestling because it's a little more of a caveman sport, right? So I think I lacked a little bit of the finesse that some of these other sports take, maybe a little bit of the coordination, but the physicality was what I loved about the game of football and wrestling too.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you're type 1 diabetic, correct?
Yes.
So how much more difficult did that make playing sports than growing up?
It was tough. I got diagnosed when I was a freshman, so I actually went through my freshman year of high school, and that's when I really started to come on as a football player. I was really small in my seventh and eighth grade years, and I hit a little growth spurt at the beginning of my freshman year, and that's really when I started to fall in love with the training process and the weight room. And our coaches expected us to be in the weight room all the time, and that was honestly a huge step in my career path because that love early on for the training process and for the weight room never left me from the time I was a kid. But I went through that whole process and I started growing and I had a really successful freshman year of football, you know, playing defense and sort of coming into my body and learning the game a little bit better. But then that was derailed about halfway through my freshman year. I was actually in the middle of basketball season and I started to notice, I used to be one of the faster ones on the team. We'd run ladders at the end of practice, and I was usually one of the first or second one done. And I went within the matter of a couple of weeks, I started losing weight, just not feeling good. My vision started to go blurry. I started to have all these signs and symptoms. And I remember one time we had a really big kid on our team that I had grown up with, and you know, he was bigger and a little bit slower. He played center for us, and I remember he beat me in the ladders, and I was that's the point where I was like, all right, something's wrong with me. I gotta figure this out. So, you know, my parents took me to the hospital, and they diagnosed me with type 1 diabetes, and that was devastating to me. For a lot of reasons, I thought my sports career was over. I thought my I thought kids were going to look at me differently, that I had a disease now. So there's a lot of things going through my mind as a freshman. And of course, there's all the hormones and everything where you're sort of insecure anyway. You're the youngest grade in the high school. So there's a lot of emotions and a lot of things going on there. But I found out my friends were still my friends. They didn't think anything different about me. And then in a way it becomes part of your identity. It becomes who you are, and you take that, you look at it as a challenge. And it definitely presented some challenges, like all the way through from high school all the way through college. It would have been way easier for me to play football. And sometimes I look and think, like, I wonder if I would have been better, if I didn't have to deal with all those challenges. But then in a way it led me down a career path that I'm doing now, because with it, you become so in tune and aware of what your body's doing all the time. And you have to know, like I had to know, what does my day look like today? How much insulin do I have to take? Because everything affects it. Is my day going to be stressful? Am I going to exercise really hard today? Because that'll make me really sensitive to my insulin. what time am I going to eat? What kind of stuff am I going to eat? I knew every carb that was going in my body because I have to, you know, I have to take insulin for every carb that I eat. So, in a way, you just become so much more aware of your physiology and how everything's working. And then you become really aware that, man, exercise has a really big impact, not just for good health benefits, but it's like I realized how my body, like how the physiology works, how my body, you know, takes that sugar and uses it, and yeah. how and so you just I just became hyper aware of everything, and it actually got me really interested in the workings of the body and how, you know, how my body works, and it started to lead me down this path, and then the training process became more intriguing for me too. So being in the weight room and training and conditioning and all that stuff, you just think a little bit more about it, and that led my interests, you know, step by step to where what I'm doing now.
Isn't it interesting how Heavenly Father knows exactly what we need? And sometimes what we need is to go through a challenge. And at the time, we think it's the worst thing that we could ever go through. But with time, you're able to look back on it and realize the blessing that it was then, and certainly that it has become.
Yeah, for sure. And I think people with a lot of challenges might say this too. But like I said before, it almost becomes part of your identity, to the point where if you look at it how you look at, or how you just described, where maybe it was part of the plan or part of the process for helping you to become who you're trying to become, then you start to maybe look at it as a blessing instead of a challenge, right? And to the point where now I don't know that I'd go back and change that, right, about myself. I think it just became part of my identity, and it led me down this path. So I think if I could go back and change it, I don't know that I would, because I've learned a lot from it, and I've had to overcome a lot of challenges because of it. And I don't know that I'd trade those experiences for, you know, whatever else maybe was in store.
What role has faith played in your life from an early age? I mean, we know we'll get into it. You served a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Indianapolis, the Indianapolis, Indiana missions. We'll get into that in a minute. But what role has faith played in your life?
I mean, it's everything to me. It's guided all my decisions, and that doesn't mean I was, you know, I was always headed down the right path or whatever. But I think from an early age, my parents just instilled that in us kids, and we knew that was a priority growing up. And so faith was really natural for me, even when, you know, maybe I was heading down paths that I shouldn't have. I always knew where the right path was. And that's partly, I think, because my parents planted the standard and I knew where it was. So however far I wandered, I always found my way back. And so it's guided almost every aspect of my life.
All right, let's get back to football a little bit. So you said you started to find that love for football, and you grew into your body, and you start to figure out some of the other things, the nutrition and the working out. And now you're starting to feel like, okay, this is something that I'm pretty good at. At what point did you realize maybe there's an opportunity to keep playing after high school? And how difficult was it to get attention at a small school like you were at?
It was pretty difficult, and I wouldn't say my recruiting process was anything like most people think about now. I took kind of the long road, but for me it felt natural. So my very first experience with recruiting, I went to a wrestling camp down in St. George. I actually think it was a wrestling tournament, because I think it was right after my senior year of football. So I was in the middle of wrestling season, and we were, my parents went down with me, and we were driving back with a couple of my buddies that were good football players too. And they were getting recruited by SUU. And at the time, that was when Gary Anderson left Utah and went to SUU, and Kalani was actually with him in his first year coaching. And I had a couple of buddies that were, they were driving back home with me, and we were going to drop them off for their recruiting trip. I wasn't getting recruited at all. And I was talking to my buddies, and I started to realize for the first time, well, you know, I play with them, and I'm pretty good too. Maybe I could get recruited. And so they said, well, hey, come in to drop us off at the office here at SUU and see if the coach is there. Maybe you can meet him. So we dropped him off and I walked into the football office and Gary Anderson came out and he was probably thinking, well, I thought there was only two kids coming here.
Why are there three people walking into my office?
And so he walked up to me and I met him and I remember standing up really tall, getting as tall and big as I could look. And I introduced myself and we talked for a couple of minutes and he said, well, I'll take a look at your film. And then we left it at that and I went home and I got a call about a week later and he said, hey, I watched your film. And, you know, credit to him, he was true to his word. He said, I watched your film and we want to bring you on a recruiting trip. So a few weeks after that, I went down to SUU with my dad and, you know, met Kalani and met Coach Anderson and met a lot of the other staff and, you know, did the whole recruiting thing. And that's the only offer or the only recruiting I ever had. You know, I had Snow College right in my backyard, but yeah. I didn't get recruited to Snow College, but got recruited to SUU and I actually signed my letter of intent with them. And then I went on my mission. And things changed on my mission. So, you know, Urban Meyer left Utah and Gary Anderson took his whole staff and went back to Utah there. So by the time I got home, there was a whole new staff at SUU. And I actually had a couple of buddies that just were playing at Snow College. And so when I got home, they said, you know, hey, if you want to go bigger, your better option is to go through Snow College. So, man, I'd lost a lot of weight on my mission, hadn't been working out.
What are you talking about? I thought that's all that athletes do on their mission is just work out, right?
Well, the 20 minutes of push-ups and stuff doesn't really prep the body that well.
Yeah, but that's a, people don't seem to understand that outside of the state of Utah, do they?
Yeah, so my buddies that were playing at Snow, they encouraged me to go down and talk to the coach. So I did what I did at SUU. I dropped in one day and Coach Steve Coburn, who, again, man, I look back in my life, I'll just the coaches were like extra dads, extra family to me, and the mentorship that I got from them. I love these guys so much. And I can think of every coach from, you know, Pop Warner all the way through high school and college. But Coach Coburn, you know, invited me into his office, and I think he'd kind of remembered me from high school a little bit. And I remember sitting down in his office and he said, so, you know, I was like 200 pounds. And he said, well, what, you know, we can let you try to have a walk-on spot. You can start winter workouts with us. And he said, what do you plan to play, like safety or linebacker? And I said, well, I played in high school was defensive end. So I think I'm going to play defensive end. And he kind of looked at me and he said, well, you know, CJ Ayu, our defensive end that we just sent to Oklahoma, he was like 270 pounds. So you got a little...
Got some work to do.
You got a little work ahead of you here. So that was good enough for me. So I started winter workouts, and within a few weeks of being in the weight room again, just my love for the weight room and work ethic that I developed in the weight room from my high school years. Within a few weeks, our defensive coordinator at Snow, he pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, we want to offer you a scholarship for the fall." And I was like, "What? I haven't been on the football field yet." And he just said, "You know, we've been watching you train and watching you work out in the weight room, and we love what you're doing. We love how you're pushing your group and your guys, and we think you're going to be awesome." So, so I got a tuition scholarship down there at Snow, and then had a couple of great seasons there. In fact, Jason Ayu, who's over our academics now, he was my position coach. But between him and Coach Coburn and Coach DeCall, our defensive coordinator, man, those guys really took a really raw high school, you know, athletes, and really they started to develop me and work on my technical skills and really gave me the opportunity and set me up to actually get recruited to a big time school like, you know, BYU. And this is where I wanted to be. I mean, this is where I wanted to go. But again, my journey here, it seems like I was always kind of a step behind everybody. So my journey to BYU from Snow College, I was actually doing summer sales between my time at Snow College because, you know, you get tuition scholarships, so you got to go make money in the summer. So I was out doing summer sales, trying to make some money. And I was actually with, if you remember, Paul Tidwell.
Of course.
His son, Cy, was my sales manager. So I was out with Cy, and I'd kind of known Coach Tidwell because, weirdly enough, Coach Tidwell, his first high school coaching job was at North Sanpete, where I went to high school, and he coached my dad and my uncle in my dad's last year of high school football. So we had this weird little long time ago family connection. But when we were out there selling, I kept bothering Cy. I knew Coach Tidwell was here at BYU, and I kept bothering his son Cy, and I kept saying, "Hey, give me your dad's number." And he's probably like, "Okay." So I think one time I got the number out of Cy Tidwell, and I just randomly called or texted Coach Tidwell, and he's like, "Who is this?" And I kind of told him, "Hey, you know, family connection." He remembered my dad and my uncle, and we talked for a little bit, and he said, "Well, let me take a look at your film." And then he ended up calling me back again, right? And so we started this sort of long distance. I had to initiate this recruiting process to BYU, but this was where I wanted to go, and I was praying hard and trying hard to get here. And eventually I came up and had a visit with Coach Mendenhall, and he offered me a scholarship, and I took it on the spot because this was my destination. So I felt super blessed and lucky to be able to be here, and then had a couple of good years here at BYU, and that's where that story went.
All right, we're going to take a break. We come back, and we're going to hit on a couple of those things, because Colby is shortchanging himself, sort of breezing over his junior college career, his career at BYU. We're going to get into all that. We'll have more with Colby Klassen right after this. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Jason Shepherd here, the host of the Deep Blue Podcast, and one of our other great BYU Radio podcasts is 2-Point Conversion, hosted by Connor Pay and Chase Roberts. These guys not only play football, but they love to share their insights and their testimony into the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. And each week, those guys are going to discuss the Come Follow Me lesson from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You get to learn and you get to hear from two football players. You can't beat that, right? You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. Colby Klassen is my guest today. And before the break, you were talking about your journey. After getting home from your mission, you end up going to Snow College, where, by the way, you were named a Junior College All-American. You said you had a couple pretty good years at Snow. Yeah, I would say so, Junior College All-American. First of all, before we even go any further than that, what did that mean to you to be able to have that type of honor and accolade?
It was surprising. I think I think through my whole career, I think I just – you don't know what you're – or at least I didn't. I wasn't real confident in myself, and I didn't know what I was capable of. So I think going from high school to Snow College, I remember my first practice at Snow College thinking, man, I played high school ball, but this is different, right? And the guys are a lot bigger. And I remember a few plays into our practice at Snow College thinking, oh, I can play here, you know? And it was the same way from the jump from Snow College to BYU. It was, oh man, that was just junior college. And now, going to BYU, I got to make this big jump. The guys are bigger, the guys are stronger. And I got to BYU and I got through my first couple practices, and it was like, no, I can play here too. So I think it was surprising all the way along. So I think, you know, it was the same thing in high school. I was an all-state player in high school and did not expect that. It was a dream, but kind of didn't have an expectation for it. And then it was the same thing at Snow College. I think I made a jump from my freshman to my sophomore year thinking like, okay, I'm going to go from playing to trying to dominate now. And then just having the help of my coaches, Coach Ayu and Coach Coburn, getting me there. But it was a surprise for me, honestly.
Well, look, and one of the things that has stood out to me as you've told your story, and the two things that have stood out is what you said happened at SUU, and then how you got to BYU. And look, I think we all would love to have things sort of fall on our lap, right? And for the outside to come to us. But sometimes you have to take things into your own hands. And you took the initiative to go with your friends in and meet with Gary and introduce yourself and sort of start that process. That turned into a scholarship offer. And even though you didn't play there, it kind of got you on the map a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then with BYU, you reached out to Coach Tidwell and got that ball rolling. And I think that's a really good lesson for people to hear that, yes, there are a lot of people that don't need to do that. But most of us do need to be the ones that sort of take that initiative on our own, and you never know what can happen for you and to you if you're willing to put yourself out there a little bit. And that's, I think you're a perfect example of that.
Yeah, those are lessons I learned along the way. And then, you know, maybe from the spiritual side of this, going back to maybe some spiritual talk here, as I've looked back now and I've realized, you know, as I've gone through life and I've realized, you know, look back on stories like that, all along the way, I was praying to Heavenly Father. I was asking Him for help, right? I was saying, hey, maybe I want to go play college football, or I really want to go to BYU. Can you help me? Can you help me get there? Can you help me realize this dream? And there's a scripture I found a little later on in life, I think, and now I use it. I try to use it to my advantage now, but it's in the New Testament. It's Christ talking, and He says he's talking about, you know, praying to Heavenly Father, and He says, "If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good things to them that ask Him?" And I think this is a combination of me sort of growing up and looking back on my life, but then also being a dad and realizing when you have kids that you would do anything for them. And there's probably dads out there like me that I have to hold myself back from spoiling my kids. I have to say, like, no, this is at some point this is not good for their development, right? And so you have to sort of hold things back from them. But I want to give my kids everything. I want to give them everything they ask for, everything they need, and everything they want. And I think when you realize Heavenly Father is the same way, that we're His children, and He wants to give us everything we ask for. I think sometimes for our good, He doesn't, right? But I believe in a God of miracles, and I believe that that if you have faith, that miracles will happen, and that if you ask for it, Jesus doesn't say, knock, and maybe I'll give it to you, right? He says, knock and ye shall receive, ask and it shall be opened unto you, or knock and it shall be opened unto you, ask and you shall receive. So if you take that literally, and you realize Heavenly Father is a perfect being, even more perfect than me as a dad, who I love my children, I want to give them everything, then that opened the world to me, that I can ask, and you got to be careful asking sometimes. Sure. Too, because I think those desires and those things that I've asked for, they led me down some of the most challenging pathways of my life, because the work that I had to put in, and the heartbreak and the challenges and stuff that I went through to have those prayers answered. But I look back now, and I can't think of a single thing I've asked for that the Heavenly Father wasn't willing to give me. I think if you have the faith that you'll see miracles, and that miracles will happen for you, you just got to ask for it, and be prepared for the challenges that might be coming your way.
What an unbelievable testimony. And there is no doubt in my mind that there was somebody listening to this podcast right now that needed to hear that exact thing. And I appreciate you being willing to share that testimony. You had mentioned that as soon as BYU had offered, you jumped because this is where you wanted to be. I take that to mean then you grew up a BYU fan.
You know, I wasn't a huge BYU fan growing up.
Really? Okay, so then I mean, why was BYU the place?
I think it goes back to growing up in a small town. I was a college football fan, but I watched BYU and Utah, but I wasn't a diehard either way. You know, in fact, I was kind of excited for Utah those some of those years that Urban Meyer was there, and I was on my mission. And I think really I wanted to just come back and play football somewhere. But I think my mission changed some things in me, like it does for a lot of young men. And I and you I realized BYU could be a really special place. And then, you know, when I got back and I started following college football more closely, and you want to start getting recruited, then you start to narrow those things down. And you know, it probably also helped that those were the years that, you know, when I got back off my mission, it was 2000, and I was at Snow College, it was 2006 and 2007, yeah, when BYU was having a lot of success. And so I think the combination of like the being here and being at in this environment and at this institution, and then being part of an exciting football program was intriguing for me. And so that came a little bit later on.
How do you look back on your BYU career specifically?
I look back now and it was short, man. I played 2 years and then I was like two and done, you know. Yeah. So I never had a redshirt year through any of my years or anything. So I look at all these COVID years and redshirt years and gray shirt years and things. And so I just, you know, I went through all 4 years. I started all 4 years and then I was done. But it was dream come true to be able to play here. And I remember my very first game. We played Northern Iowa. And I was so nervous before that game. I was up the entire night thinking, like, I gotta go to sleep. But I was, you know, Vic Soto was my roommate at the time, and I probably drove him nuts, like, getting in and out of bed. But I was up all night. And then I ended up that day, I had one of my – it was, like, my first game at BYU, and it was one of the best of my career. You know, I had, like, two sacks and a forced fumble and a fumble recovery and a couple of tackles for loss. And so it was a dream come true. I mean, to be in that stadium and hear the rumble of the crowd and all that stuff, amazing.
I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, would it be a fair assumption to say that you're surprised it's taken this long for me to mention the name Sam Bradford? Does it usually come up much sooner?
With most people, they'll recognize me or they'll recognize my name and they'll say, oh, it's Sam, you know, Sam Bradford. So our names are like
linked,
eternally linked together somehow. But I figured it would come up.
Yes, it's about to come up right now. And the interesting part about this, certainly it was one of the biggest wins in BYU football history. I remember exactly where I was. I was sitting in my basement watching the game on TV. It was the night before we were about to drive to Anaheim to take our kids to Disneyland. Needless to say, it's a very exciting and very fun drive to Disneyland after the victory. But for those who may not understand what we're discussing, 2009, BYU's playing Oklahoma in AT&T Stadium in Dallas. And obviously, most people assume Oklahoma's going to beat BYU. That's not how it played out, but there was a specific play where you hit Sam Bradford and knocked him out of the game. So take us through the play from your perspective and what happened.
Yeah, it was my favorite defensive call that we had because it was designed specifically for me. And so I played the wheel backer, which is, you know, the outside linebacker. I spend most of my time on the edge of the line of scrimmage. It looks like a stand-up defensive end. And the way the play is designed to work is our defensive end, who is Jan Jorgensen, he goes up the field wide and hard, and he tries to draw the tackle with him. And then our nose tackle goes across the center's face, so he sort of draws the center with him. So the only guy left is the guard. And then Sean Doman, who was one of our middle linebackers, he'll usually blitz that A-gap and sort of turn the guard and take him with him. So it's actually a delayed blitz. I delay for just a half a second, and then I go, and I shoot the B-gap. And by the time if I delay for just long enough, everyone gets taken up in the rest of the blitz, all the you know, offensive linemen. So it gives me just enough time to sneak through that gap before an offensive lineman can get their hands on me. So it was my favorite call all season. In fact, the big hit that everyone remembers on Sam Bradford, there was two or three plays before I hit him on the exact same play. And I got through, you know, squeaky clean. So and then, you know, through the season I hit a bunch of other quarterbacks doing that same blitz. So it's a great blitz, great call. But you know, they had a young offensive line and it worked that first time. So Jaime Hill, our defensive coordinator, dialed it up again and, you know, ran the blitz again. And I think someone maybe got a hand on me is all. And But I went through pretty much free, and just as he was throwing the ball, I hit him, and he landed kind of funny, and I landed right on top of him. And you know, you're never trying to hurt anybody, but I tried to hit like sure. I wanted to hurt people, but you're never really trying to hurt anybody.
And it was 100% legal. The hit, there was absolutely nothing wrong with the hit. It was a legal hit.
Yep. Yeah. And then, you know, unfortunate for them and their team, because Sam Bradford was, you know, he was the returning Heisman trophy winner. And I think it, you know, helped us win the game because they put a backup quarterback in the second half, and then we, you know, battled it out with him for the rest of the half.
Well, and I know you've talked about this since, but you felt pretty bad about the situation. Probably not in the moment, because obviously you got to the quarterback. That's the whole job. But after the fact and with everything, I know you've talked about how you felt really bad about the situation.
Yeah, you never wanted to hurt anybody. And it's like I said, I love the physical nature of the game. That's part of the reason I loved football. And that was my favorite part about football, was just tackling. And I think, you know, people love it too. It's you see a big hit, you get excited about it. So I think for myself, and also creating that environment for the fans was really fun. But at the end of the day, you realize if that guy was on your team, he'd probably be one of your best friends, right? So you're never really trying to hurt anybody, but I also realize it was part of the game, and we see it all the time.
Okay, so you mentioned your 2 years at BYU went pretty quick. When time came that you were getting ready to finish up your BYU career and you're getting ready to graduate, what was the plan for you after that was done?
You know, it took me a little while to kind of figure out my career path. So when I got here to BYU, I knew I wanted to do something in a health related field. And so I had explored a bunch of different, I was an exercise science major. I had explored a bunch of different career options. I'd looked at physical therapy. I'd looked at going to medical school and becoming a medical doctor. And I took all the prerequisites to go that route, and things kind of changed over time for me. I think when I first got here, I was going to do physical therapy, and then I said, no, I want to do medicine. And I just love movement and exercise and training so much that I still remember the day. I was sitting in a molecular biology class, and I walked out of the class, and I remember going down the big stairs at campus, and I was like, This isn't my thing. Like I love what I'm learning, but I want to move. I want to train. I want to be with people. I want to exercise. So I actually went and talked to Coach Omer after that, and I said, hey, I think I want to be a strength coach. And so he said, well, let's do it. I'll set up a GA position for you. So when I finished playing, I actually spent another year and a half working with Coach Omer in the weight room and training under him as a strength and conditioning coach. And then I was getting ready to go to grad school. I had some schools selected that had good, you know, strength and conditioning coaches there. I was going to try to go get on and be a, you know, start my strength and conditioning career. And then it just hit me one day that, you know, I might be able to blend the two of those a little bit, and physical therapy might give me a little bit of that. I can kind of keep a foot in the medical world and in the patient care world, but I can also do exercise with people, and there's a lot of career options for physical therapists. So I ended up going to physical therapy school after I finished my strength and conditioning internship, and went to physical therapy school, went to Rocky Mountain University here in Provo, and got my doctorate in physical therapy. And then I got out and I worked in the clinic for a couple of years, and they enticed me to come back and help teach a little bit at Rocky Mountain University. So I started.
Yeah, you were an adjunct professor, right?
I was a full not a full professor. I wasn't adjunct. I was an assistant professor, but I was full time there.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So I taught there for about 5 years, full time, and did a lot of clinical stuff on the side. I always kept my foot in the strength and conditioning world, mostly with high school athletes. So I ran a few strength and conditioning programs for high school teams during that time. And then I did a PhD in human and sports performance while I was there too. And so I always kept my foot in that sort of sports performance training world. And then when this job came open at BYU, it was a great fit because I had done a little bit of both.
What did it mean to you to be able to come back? And what does it mean to you still to this day to be back here at BYU? And you mentioned, I mean, throughout the course of the conversation, you've mentioned all of these guys that you've you've had an opportunity to meet along the way at different schools or at BYU, and a lot of them are still here, and a lot of them you can still have conversations with today if you wanted to.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be back here and among not just BYU in general, but all of the people that have helped you along the way?
It was huge for me. I mean, weirdly enough, I kind of knew I was going to be back here somehow. And I remember the day and time thinking I was actually interviewing for some different jobs, and I just had a thought and a feeling that no, you need to hang tight, you need to stay in Utah because I'll be back here sometime. So there was a spiritual feeling that I had there, and again, like everything else in my life, sort of a roundabout way of getting there and making it happen, but eventually came back, and it means everything to me. I mean, I love this place, and I'm very loyal to this place and the people that are here and the coaches that I get to be around. Coach Kalani's been amazing, and you know, I've been here with some of my teammates. Harvey and Jan Jorgensen was here, and so it's been amazing. It's been an amazing experience. It's been a challenging experience, but I've grown a lot, I think, spiritually and just in my career by taking on that challenge.
We talked about your family growing up. You've mentioned your current family a couple of times. What is your family dynamic now? What's life like in the Claussen household these days?
It's really, really good. I tell a lot of our players, man, just have a ton of kids, because being a dad is the best part of life. So happily married. I met my wife at Snow College. Her name's Brianna. She went to a rival high school growing up, but she's an amazing mom. She's the glue that kind of keeps us all together. I have my oldest is my daughter. I had her when I started playing here. In fact, the day we got to BYU from Snow College is the day we had my daughter, and she's 17 now and going into her senior year next year, which is crazy to think about. But so one daughter, and then we have three boys behind her, and it's a wild, chaotic wrestling match with those guys, you know, with those little boys all the time. And I feed into that a lot. I think my wife says she has four boys.
Yeah.
Because she has to deal with me, you know, all the time. But just, again, being a dad and being a parent and being a husband, the best part of my life by far. And so our house is a little chaotic, and but it's amazing.
Well, Colby, thank you so much for being willing to do this. I told you, I mean, I covered your career, so I knew you as a player. It's awesome to see the success that you're having now, and how much what you have brought to BYU has helped the program. And by the way, it literally just dawned on me. This was not planned, by the way. It literally dawned on me that I have been wearing a BYU baseball strength and conditioning shirt that I have not worn in a really long time. Why? Not planned at all. So it was meant to be that this interview, I was wearing a strength and conditioning t-shirt. So, but again, not planned. But
it shows off your guns really nicely.
Okay.
I was gonna compliment you on that earlier.
Oh well, thank you. And coming from you, that means a lot. I appreciate that. And again, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation. This was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it too.
This was great. Thanks, Shep. Appreciate
you bet,
it.
You bet. All right. Thanks once again to my guest, Colby Claussen. My name is Jason Shepherd. Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcasts platforms, or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.